The animal trail that you have been following widens here into a pathway that has clearly been trod by many feet, leading into a ravine-like area. The walls rise rather steeply to either side to a height of about 100 feet or so, dark, streaked rock mingled with earth. Clumps of trees grow here and there, both on the floor of the ravine and up the sloping walls of the canyon. The opening you stand in is about 200 feet wide. The ravine runs about 500 feet west, where the western end rises into a steep slope. Here and there, at varying heights on all sides of the ravine, you can see the black mouths of cave-like openings in rock walls. The sunlight is dim, the air dank. There is an oppressive feeling here, as if something is watching and waiting. A flock of ravens rise croaking from the ground, the beat of their wings and their cries magnified by the terrain to sound loud and horrible. Amongst the litter of rubble, boulders, and dead wood scattered around the ravine floor, you can see bits of gleaming ivory and white. Closer inspection reveals that these are bones and skulls of men, animals, and other things. They each lived parallel lives. What do you do? Parallel Lives is your source for atypical analog roleplaying. This episode is just over half an hour.
Hello, and welcome to Parallel Lives. I'm your host, Hugh. I've killed Wednesday.
I was about to pass it over to Hugh and say, Hugh, why don't you introduce this one?
We found a better way.
By which I mean, for this episode, we're going to be departing from our usual format for something of an MC'd conversation. I'm your MC. No, we're not playing Apocalypse World, but I am going to be interrogating everybody else about GMs and not GMs, and this is a great way for me to not just monologue into the microphone, because I run a lot of games and everyone else here only sometimes runs games. So, GMs, good or bad? Am I a good GM? No, that's not on the table for this conversation. Let's stipulate for the purposes of this discussion that I am a competent at best GM, and
you seem like a lovely GM, Hugh. I don't play very many GM games.
Then move on. So, we've played a lot of games on this podcast that are storytelling games that don't have someone GMing the game, where the whole thing works because we all got together, we sat down at a table, and we agreed to tell a story together in a harmonious and egalitarian way where everybody's voice was heard equally and we all engaged in a profound creative synthesis of our ideas into something unique and totally disjointed based on the utter failure of everyone to be imagining the same things at the same time. That's not true. We haven't played a lot of games that went that way, but storytelling games can go that way. In my not-so-humble opinion, that's because they lack a certain kind of glue that is a GM, a game master, a dungeon master, an MC, someone whose job is to hold the collective imagination together and give everyone a common ground on which to relate to each other in this fictional world we're exploring. Am I crazy? Carrie.
I don't think you're crazy, but I do think that it is complicated because sometimes the GM can fail to communicate things, and a lot of the time, if a GM has failed to communicate things, it results in them looking at the players and saying, oh, no, sorry, things don't work that way. Whereas if you run into that same kind of communication error in a storytelling game, people go, oh, I wasn't thinking about that, but I like that idea, so let's massage the past.
Similarly, having a GM'd game naturally puts a lot of pressure on one player, specifically the GM of the game, and while I think Hugh is a lovely GM, I think it is possible in a role-playing game to have someone who's maybe not a great GM and maybe can't stand up to the pressure, and at that point, probably have a very bad experience.
Okay, so but I want to push back there, because it's also totally possible to have someone who's a bad player. Absolutely. In a collaborative storytelling game. Mm-hmm. I might even go so far as to say that a storytelling game actually has a higher burden on the players because everybody has to be good at some portion of what the GM does, or the game will suffer. Whereas in a GM'd game, you can have a player who's only capable of, say, problem solving, but not at acting or inhabiting their character well, and they can still make positive contributions to the game, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think that there are more types of players that can't make contributions to storytelling games than to GM system games. However, if you have, say, four people who are playing your storytelling game, and
one of them is garbage, the other three can just be like, well, you don't have any ideas, but I have one. And can still...
Kind of depends on system.
It does depend on system. But in many systems, if somebody isn't pulling their weight, the other players can make up for it. Whereas, in a GM system, if the GM can't pull their weight, the game is ruined. Like, one bad GM in a GM-less system will probably make the game worse. But a bad GM in a GM system, you're really going to struggle to have a good time.
Everyone rolls to find polite excuses to quit the game.
Yep, and other things I've done.
So there's some material there to return to, but I wanted to jump a little bit to a slightly different question. So I know all of you have played in tabletop role-playing games. Carrie and Wednesday, you've both been in the position of running tabletop role-playing games.
I think Carrie more than me, but yeah.
I played in at least one thing that you ran.
I guess
ran.
That's true. Yeah.
Charles and I sort of co-ran a game in some ways. A number of years ago.
Okay, so question for all of you. What do you like about being in the position of GMing a game, and what's not so great about that? Wednesday?
Yeah, okay, so I know I am in some ways sitting in here in this podcast as, like, the person who's, like, most like, oh, I love story games. I want to make it clear, I love GM games as well. And, like, I can say that the idea of being a GM, even though I have not generally been able to live up to it, is that you get to create something exciting and show it to your friends and have them have one thing that Hugh likes a lot, nice surprises. And if you're a bad GM, maybe you have a whole complicated story that you just sort of want to make your friends live through, but that's a different thing altogether. Now, that said, of course, the pressure is you as the GM, you have to improvise as many characters. You have to do a lot of voices if you're a voice person. You have to have ideas in your head for if people go off the map, because inevitably they are. That's how it works when there's a map. And I think that's difficult, and I think that is often more difficult than something that I feel like I am up to, and that is just speaking to my own personal character. I am considering trying to run a game of Paranoia at some point. I got that new Kickstarter. I'm always interested in trying to run it. It's got a lot of interesting stuff, but if someone else came up with their own idea for a GM's Paranoia game, we would do that instead, and I'd be just as happy.
Charles?
I'm not a person who has ever run one of the games for the podcast. I'm a person who's helped out on a number of games in a, like, planning, scenario design, character design, plot design capacity. And when I've done that, I've really enjoyed that. That process of world building, of setting out space for players to play in, of coming up with interesting plots, of finding cute mechanical hacks that will let, you know, low-level characters have an easy hook into big, epic-feeling things in the setting. All of these things are fun for me, and the reason I've never been the GM for a game is that I live in perpetual fear of how well or how poorly I could handle the thinking on the feet, being those characters in the moment, adjusting to player movements within the game world portion. So that's how I break down.
Yeah, I'm in a similar position. I do think it is really fun to have full creative control of a world. I think it's really fun to populate that. I think it's really fun to come up with ideas about, like, ooh, I bet this will interest the players. But I also think that interesting players can be really, really hard. And this is something that I struggled with tremendously when I ran the Monster Hearts game. I was like, oh shit, how do I hook all of my players into this conflict? And there was one player that I never was able to get my hooks into. It can also be a giant challenge when you expect a game to go one way and it doesn't go that way. So, like, for example, you're like, okay, so it's gonna go A, B, C. And instead of getting to C, the players spend forever on B. And you're like, oh gosh, you guys, there's nothing in B left. How do I get you to C? How do I get you to C? And that's really hard. Basically, trying to make sure that your game is consistently interesting to the players can be a huge challenge. But world building is really fun.
So I'm gonna answer my own question here, which is probably a shitty thing for a MC to
no,
do, but
by all means, I can restate it and you can answer it if you want.
I think we can proceed as
okay.
is. So the great thing about GMing is that when you have a good idea, you don't have to get anyone else's buy-in. I prefer to GM with as little in mind as possible about how I want the game to actually go. If you want my thoughts on GMing tabletop role-playing games, see our podcasts on Dogs in the Vineyard and Apocalypse World and a couple of other things. But generally speaking, I think the philosophy outlined in the Dogs in the Vineyard rulebook about how to put together a tabletop role-playing game scenario is the greatest statement on how to GM a game well that anyone has ever written. Anyway, the thing that I don't mind about GMing is all the stuff that Charles articulated. That stuff doesn't scare me, and I always have felt that I'm able to do it competently with a minimum amount of stress.
Yeah, do you feel like you've ever, like, failed as a GM and just have been like, oh, yep, really fucked that one up, like, in the last 5 years, say?
Ooh, certainly, certainly. I think I hit maybe 2 out of every 3 games I run really work. There's definitely dynamics that you get in a GM tabletop role-playing game where the game is just not quite working.
Yeah.
And part of that comes from the fact that all GM'd tabletop role-playing games impose some kind of barrier between the GM and the players. While there are certainly games like Dogs in the Vineyard, like other things that encourage you or even enjoin or command you to delegate some of the creative process to the players and make it very clear that it would be totally acceptable for the player to jump in and add an element to the world, narrate some side details, do things like that. Ultimately, narrative coherence and having a story that seems to be meaningfully about something and successfully means something ultimately falls on you. Players who have a scope of a single character can only carry that so far. I have my own ideas about that, but we'll leave that for the GMing 2.0s section. And that's where I feel like sometimes I fail as a GM. Sometimes you just don't have a game that in the end is actually interesting. And it seems to me, and I'd like you all to comment, that that's one of the advantages of storytelling games, or at least of many of the storytelling games that we play. They have very coherent premises, and they make it very clear from the beginning what the game is supposed to be about. And that's something that's usually lacking or only depicted in broad terms in traditional tabletop role-playing games.
I think I'd agree with that, yes.
Yeah, one of the reasons, actually, I think that we play a lot of GMless games for this podcast, especially near to the beginning of the podcast, was because GMless games tend to require very little prep time. They tend to be one session, and they tend to be relatively quick. And that is not at all a knock against GM games. Again, it's just a matter of we're lazy.
Charles, thoughts, feelings?
I bet if you were the sort of person inclined to go back through the archives on this podcast, you would have difficulty finding an episode I appear in where I do not praise the game's ability to set people on the right course early on with its specification of genre and at least like maybe one or two ways that mechanics push you in that direction. I say it so often that at this point I sort of try and reserve it for the games that I think do it even uniquely better than average. Because, yeah, we play a lot of story-focused games here. We play a lot of sort of GM-less, loosey-goosey, don't roll too many dice, just think about what sort of narrative you're building games. And that is a strength that they have with serious consistency. But I don't know whether it's unique to them, or whether it's just sort of an accident of who makes those games and why. I think you could absolutely build GM'd systems that had those same degree of mechanical genre focus that would be helpful in a pretty similar way. I think it's just the case that, in general, we don't.
So, I'll put it out there that if you read the rule books, Dungeons & Dragons definitely thinks it has a specific genre that it's playing in. I think that's ludicrous, but that's a tangent.
I would say one thing that canon has really hooked me into GM'd games oftentimes is looking at character creation. I don't often get really deep into the mechanics of combat, etc., but when I can look into character creation, when I can see all the different mechanics for, like, you know, the different skills I can get, the different pieces of equipment I could have, that's the kind of thing that grabs me about this crunchier kind of games. And it's almost a pity that we don't get to look at that a little more often.
I feel that way too, but perhaps in a slightly different way. A GM game is an opportunity for me to build a character that I've never played before and just spend time with them and really do some, like, strong character building, which I really like, and some strong role-playing, which I really like. And I think that's one of the reasons why Dulse ends up being one of my personal favorite games that we've played, is that it is a storytelling game, so it was collaborative and we didn't do all that dice stuff,
But I felt like we all built really, really strong characters and all did some really strong role-playing and ended up playing a really cool story.
And we got to go deeper than usual into the pun well, which was also kind of
fun. Which was also really fun.
I actually have a little bit more to say on that, if I can hold the talking
stick
for a second longer. Sorry, I joke that, like, we had an extra good time with the puns in that one, but what was actually happening there is we decided that, like, oh, yeah, a feature of the cyberpunk world we're building is that major organizations have names that are puns that would be relevant to our world. And so we built a unified aesthetic for the world, admittedly around puns, but like, hey, Piers Anthony gets to write books, then hey, we gotta be allowed.
Absolutely. You know, and that's definitely something that a GM can do, but if you like world building, then, you know, you don't necessarily get to do that unless you're GMing. But on the other hand, for most GM-less games that I have ever played, my focus has been split between building the world and making sure that the world and the overall narrative and story are cool, and also making sure that my character, like, is roughly a person. So I feel like I play way worse characters when I do GM-less games, but they're still worth it for me because I get to do, you know, these other creative tasks that I really like.
Gosh, we should play one of those cool games where you spend the entire first session establishing a lot of world-building details through a shared creative process and do all that, and then you keep playing in that world.
No, that's like totally super-duper my jam.
You bring up a really good point, Carrie, which is that, in my opinion at least, it's actually harder to roleplay a character in a storytelling game.
Yes, agreed.
In that the act of stepping outside and looking at the whole story is just a fundamentally different kind of creative act than trying to embody a character and live that character.
My favorite storytelling games that we have played are the games where I feel both that we told a good story and that I played a character that I felt I roughly understood. And I think for me, these are Penny and Dulce.
For clarification for the listener, that is A Penny for My Thoughts, just in case you haven't listened to that episode.
Or you were thinking of the character from Inspector Gadget.
I know how to become a better role player. I pretty much know how to become a better, like, collaborative storyteller. And part of that is just sort of yes-anding people. I don't know how to become a better GM. I have, over the course of this podcast, GM'd 3 times. And every instance that I've GM'd on this podcast, I have encountered a challenge that I was like, wow, that's really hard. So, like, I'm sure that I will GM more in the future, but, like, I've been GMing intermittently for years now, and I definitely think that I don't know how to GM.
I can sometimes GM, but only through text.
Yeah, it's really, like, it's just, it's like a totally different skill set, and I think it's a skill set that's hard to develop, and I think that's one of the things that draws me to storytelling games, is that I feel like I can pretty much do them. Like, I can do the creative world building there, where I don't necessarily feel like I can do it in a GM game, if I'm the GM.
So the question of how do you become a better GM is an interesting one, and boy, there's a lot of stuff written about it on the internet by a lot of people, and as far as I'm concerned, it's basically a coin flip whether I think they're right or wrong. There's a ton of material out there to answer the question, how do I run Pathfinder better? And it goes in so many different directions. You'll get people who argue, well, you just shouldn't be playing Pathfinder. Play a different game if you don't want to spend an hour and a half rolling out each fight scene exactly in initiative order, yada, yada, yada. And as soon as you start thinking about how do I GM better, it seems to me that a lot of times what immediately comes up is the thing that Charles brought up. How is mechanical complexity of the game sort of distributed between the players and the GM, and how big are the mechanics that the storytelling is riding on? And I actually don't think that that's a question related to whether or not a game is GM'd, but I think in practice it may well be. You seem to have something to say about that, Charles, so if you want to continue with that point.
I wonder whether we've ended up with the world that we have ended up with because we don't have a great, easy solution for basically fully complex mechanical combat where there isn't someone in charge of being all the goblins. And I wonder if it's just that is how we have ended up segregating systems into, you know, GM-less, mechanically lighter systems which share those duties among players, and GM'd mechanically heavier systems that put the charge of being the world onto a given player. A side note for someone else to explore, I wonder whether it would be possible to just sort of stick that combat runner part of the role onto a non-human somewhere?
Well, I mean, I think that the answer is, yeah, kind of obviously yes, because that's sort of what a lot of more complicated board games are. Like, basically, Arkham Horror, which we can or cannot talk about whether it's good or not, but Arkham Horror is a game where there is no GM, and the monsters run themselves, and you just keep track of it into every individual combat.
And my worry about that would be that it would kind of flatten out the experience a little bit. Like, I don't play a lot of games with combat in them. Oh my god, that's a sentence I've said. But one of the things that separates D&D from a video game, even a video game of D&D, is that you can have, like, lateral solutions to the problem even during a fight. Potentially, right? Like, I think?
Yeah.
No,
you can
if your GM likes them.
Okay, fair enough.
Basically. Well, yeah, let's be clear. You can only have those things in D&D that the GM lets you have.
Okay, I mean,
anything
but there
the
is
GM
space
won't
for
let
them.
You have.
But there is space for them. There's nothing about the game itself which prevents that. There is something about the GM, but in a computer game, guess what? There's programming. You literally can't implement that solution.
That's fundamentally why I love tabletop role-playing games, is because the fatal flaw of all other forms of media are, why can't I just stack up enough random objects that I can climb over that wall?
Why won't you let me stack up all the debris in this area?
Right. That's just always the thing that breaks the realism of a computer game on some level. And even the most beautiful, open-worldy, big-budget, brand-new, shiny, fancy games made today, there's still some thing you obviously can't do, and you can't ask a person a question that you would ask a human being.
And also there are all these sort of weird middle states, because like, oh, my lateral solution to attempting to steal from shops in Skyrim is balancing a bucket on the head of the shopkeep. Which it turns out, like, Skyrim calculates eyesight lines in real time and will have them effectively blocked by the bucket. So you can steal by putting up, I think they patched this out, by the way, so don't try this now. But you could steal by putting a bucket on someone's head. Of course, you're also playing in a world where your character walked up to a shopkeep, put a bucket on their head, and the shopkeep was like, yep, that's my life now. Just gonna stand here and talk to you about the weather and what I think about the Jarl. Oh, bucket on my head.
I feel so fashionable.
And something that I think is extra super wonderful about tabletop role-playing games is that you can be so rewarded for your lateral thinking, not just in that you get to succeed at the encounter if your GM allows it, but also in that your GM can look at you and be like, what? What a cool idea. And your, like, compatriots around the table can be like, dude, that's so fucking rad.
You're right, we should light the badger on
fire
and send it into the dungeon.
That's so cool! Which is why there are so many D&D stories.
And that's why I think it's better to have a GM than to have a storytelling game. Because, you know, in a pure storytelling game, the payoff for that kind of lateral thinking is weak. Because, sure, you can solve a problem however you want. All you have to do is name a way of solving the problem. That's not a real constraint.
Yeah, I think it's not a real constraint. How about this? There are many games where there's, like, a really robust hint system. And you could, if you wanted to, just use the hints and just solve the equation really easily. But you don't wanna. You wanna actually, like, think about it and solve the problem. And that's what I think a lot of storytelling games are like. You could just hand wave away the problem, but solving the problem is fun, and you come up with a solution for it, and your compatriots are still like, cool solution, bro.
One thing, and this is tooting my own horn, I remember the moment playing In a Penny for Our Thoughts, and it turned out, after none of us realizing it for like half the game, that the character Charles is playing was gay, and that sort of changed the entire dynamic of the thing that we were putting together, because it, you know, things happen out of order in A Penny for Your Thoughts. It's about reliving your memories and stuff. Go listen to the episode, it's good. And the moment that came out, we all laughed and we had a good time because we'd thought up a new idea. And that part is similar, I think, in a GM or not in a GM state. And I know that certainly the example we gave before is simulating combat. It does not work in storytelling games, generally speaking. And there are other things that are different between GM games and storytelling games just than combat, of course, though.
Character solutions still exist.
Yes, that's the end of that sentence.
Yeah, character solutions still exist. but I have no analog for the feeling I get, admittedly most often in video games, which let's put a pin in that for just a moment, where I come up with a plan and put that plan into action, and the plan works, and you feel that accomplishment. I don't know that we've ever duplicated that moment in a GM-less system. Moving back to that pin in video games, I note that it's quite possible video games are a much better medium to produce that feeling of accomplishment over those sorts of obstacles. There may be real ways that expecting to get that feeling out of tabletop role-playing games, you can do it, but it's maybe not the best thing to be spending your time on in the medium.
Except for the lateral thinking part.
And clearly, this has not always been the case. Like, look, there is the competitive D&D played at cons, killer dungeons. That mode of D&D play exists. But it's actually kind of the past. Some decades past, even.
I also want to say one thing real fast, which is that GM games, you think of as sort of having a monopoly on surprise. And they are way better at surprise, because you can literally have somebody who is like, guess what, you guys? They were the bad guy all along, and you're like, oh shit, dude. But you can replicate that, or have similar experiences in the best moments of storytelling games, too, where somebody is like, wait a second, you guys. What if they were the bad guy all along? And everybody's like, shit, that's so cool. Or in that moment where we realized that Charles's character was gay. That was a surprise to everyone. We were like, oh, okay, whatever. That's awesome and it makes sense. We've just slotted this thing into place. That is super cool. So there can still be surprise. I think it's harder to get surprise. I think that surprise can often require sort of like a stroke of brilliance, but I think that those strokes exist.
It seems to me as less of a stroke of brilliance as just a really good synergy between all of your players, where
sure.
Everyone is sort of equally engaged and everyone has a shared understanding of what's important in the game,
mm-hmm.
and you're playing well.
No, that makes sense.
Whereas in a GM'd game, you don't need that for a meaningful surprise to arise.
No, you don't.
You just need to say, for the GM to say, and then suddenly a sniper shoots somebody.
A prostitute. An underage prostitute.
Yeah.
This is specifically from our Apocalypse World game. I was trying to give a lot of context here for
Elizabeth. Yeah, no, absolutely. That was correct.
In which I killed a lot of children.
See our podcast on Apocalypse World, True Believers.
Which may or may not predate this one. We should be a little bit careful.
Oh, goodness. I'm actually not sure.
Possibly forthcoming podcast on Apocalypse World.
Yeah.
It'll happen. See it in the future or see it in the past, but do see it.
Yeah.
See it.
Definitely.
With your ears.
Listen to it in this audio medium.
This podcast is not for listening, it's for ear seeing.
Our now legendary podcast on Apocalypse World. In stores now.
Back in classic Parallel Lives issue.
It's my favorite. Now we're talking about very specific things in comic books. Anyways.
Look. We know what the media bed in which we lie is. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, there's a docu-mockera in that bed.
Yeah, and a Stanley.
A Stanley docu-mockera, the Parallel Lives story.
So, Hugh, did you have any other questions? Do you have any other observations? Are you here to be like, you guys are fucking wrong, you story jerks?
No, I think you're largely right. You agreed with me on all the important points.
We talked a little bit about surprise. Is there more to say on that? Because we say more episodes than not, or at least I say more episodes than not, is, man, there were a couple of points in this playthrough where I sure wish there was a more robust and surprise-producing conflict resolution method in this system. But instead, we all just sort of put our heads together and decided.
And that's why you should tune in next time for Mechanics. What are they good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
Hey, right?
From here, we've sort of encapsulated a bunch of questions about GMing and why is it useful for the game to have a GM. And the issue we've managed to avoid talking about at any length is because certain kinds of mechanics are only possible with the GM. And that possibility space of game mechanics, I would argue, may be in the end what truly distinguishes GM'd and non-GM'd games.
In conclusion, GM'd games are good. Also, GM-less games are good. Have fun.
We like
pals.
Games. Games are good.
Also, maybe play a video game. I don't know.
You do you, buddy.
Why don't you read a comic book?
Tune in next time for the promo episode of Basement Ludology, Charles's video game
Ooh.
Podcast.
Oh man, I could be
Blue Dodge.
I could be Lord.
Thank you for listening to Parallel Lives. If you want to find the show online, we're at parallelurl.com, parallelpodcast@gmail.com, or the Parallel Lives Tabletop Podcast on Facebook. Review us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio, and we will love you forever. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, the podcast is at Parallel Chat, Carrie is at Baroque Emotions, Hugh is at Ionic Blather, Charles is at Gush4U with the number 4 and the letter U, and I am at Wednesday Quest. This episode was produced by me, with music by Kevin MacLeod. Also, the intro to this episode was almost entirely lifted from The Keep on the Borderlands by Gary Gygax. Check back next week when the apocalypse begins. That episode comes in at about an hour and 10 minutes.